fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, what seemed like the longest road trip of all. The events, the campaigns, the debates, the ads, the endorsements, and the issues leading up to the 2012 elections. Today we're going to look back at the high points and low points of the presidential race, the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin, the congressional race in the 7th District, and some of the local races that determine the makeup of the state Senate and Assembly in Madison. We're also going to look forward to what those election results portend for the future of the country and North Central Wisconsin. We've got a great panel today here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Wausau. Our guests are Ed Miller, political science professor at UW Stevens Point, Robert Mentzer, opinion page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, who helped me with several of the forums and debates we held this election cycle, and also Jane Graham Jennings, executive director of the Women's Community of Wausau. We're also taking your phone calls today. What do you think of the results? What were the high points and low points of the campaign for you? What do you hope the winners accomplish in the months and years ahead? And if you could change the way the political process works, what changes would you make? We're taking your calls, your questions, your comments at 1-800-780-9742. And we know you have opinions. It's 1-800-780-9742. And our lines are wide open right now. You can get in right away if you call that number, 1-800-780-9742. Ed, Jane, and Robert, thank you for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, let's just start with your general observations about the most significant things that you saw happen on November 6th. Ed Miller, let's start with you. If you had to pick one or two things, what comes to mind?
Well, one of the main things on November 6th on the day of the election was who voted and who voted for President Obama and Mitt Romney. And that was, and people keep referring to this, the demographic change in the electorate. The fact is that the electorate has become much more minority, and particularly Latino. And in the Latino vote, Mitt Romney got a very small percentage of the Latino vote, 29%, according to the exit poll. In 2004, President Bush had received 40% of the Latino vote. So you can see the major switch there. But also we had Asian Americans, which have increased in population, who also went for Obama, as well as African Americans overwhelmingly went for Obama. So you put together all these, plus some others, led to President Obama's victory.
And Jane Graham Jennings, there was quite a gender gap as well.
I think it's really important that we're seeing for the first time, the record number of women, still not equality in our government, but certainly more women than have been historically, and I think that that's really important. And the number of women that came out to vote, I think there were a number of things throughout this process that occurred that really drew attention to women.
Any other thoughts? Because we've got a full hour, we'll get to them. Let's go to Robert Mentzer next. Rob, what sticks out in your mind?
Sure. Well, I mean, those things are, I see as huge, the demographic difference. And I think a question will be whether to what extent those demographic changes were driven by the fact that this was Obama running and that this was a presidential year, or whether to some extent that makeup of the electorate will stay around for the midterms.
Well, I'm going to play a short tape. We're going to play a little clip of Mitt Romney's concession speech and a clip from President Obama's victory speech.
This is a time of great challenges for America, and I pray that the president will be successful in guiding our nation. The nation, as you know, is at a critical point. At a time like this, we can't risk partisan bickering and political posturing. Our leaders have to reach across the aisle to do the people's work. And we citizens also have to rise to the occasion.
I believe we can seize this future together because we are not as divided as our politics suggests. We're not as cynical as the pundits believe. We are greater than the sum of our individual ambitions, and we remain more than a collection of red states and blue states. We are and forever will be the United States of America.
Some of the sweeping oratory from President Obama that we didn't hear on the campaign trail until that final speech, November 6th. But let's look at this, the contest. President Obama won the popular vote. He broke the 50% mark despite being persistently under that figure in the opinion polls leading up to the election. He also swept the battleground states with the exceptions of North Carolina and possibly Florida, where he is ahead at this point. He won Wisconsin, which was declared by CBS News only a few minutes after the polls closed. Surprised he swept the battlegrounds, Ed Miller.
No, one of the reasons I wasn't surprised is because the polls had all shown that he was ahead, and one of the, if you want to call it a winner in the election besides President Obama, it was the polls, because the polls were right on, and they were all slightly off. I mean, they're slightly different.
Some of them were more right on than others.
Right, but some were very, very close, which is surprising given that the fact that the response rates were low on the polls because people were hanging up on the polls, and they continuing problem of cell phones that are being used, which makes it more difficult to poll those individuals. And people with cell phones, even when there's a cell phone component of the poll, are more likely not to respond.
You guys get polled? Did all three of us get polled? I certainly did.
My wife got a call on the night before the election, and it was an automated call, and she answered it. She had it on speakerphone, and it was fun. She hung up, and 5 seconds later, the same call, back to the same number.
But, we got polls on our landline, but nothing on our cell phone. So that may be an indication.
Right, and I got the same thing. It was on the landline, nothing on the cell phone.
Jane, how about you?
Same thing, landline.
Both of the candidates, if you listen to those remarks, striking a hopeful note for bipartisanship, do you think that's likely given the obstruction that we saw in the Republican-led House and with the filibusters in the Senate? Why should the next 4 years be different if the president wasn't able to get Congress to go along with him on a lot of things during the first term?
Well, I don't see anything different because the Tea Party, which is the main obstructionist group in the House of Representatives, they had indicated that they're not going to change their position at all. They've taken the no tax pledge, and as a result, they were very negative to Boehner, having suggested that some compromise could be reached.
Tea Party took some tough losses in this election, though. Do you think? I mean, is there a chance that the Tea Party will see their power wane within the Republican Party?
Well, they may see it, but their argument is that they need to increase their power, and actually criticized Romney as the reason for the losses. On the other hand, as you point out, the Republican Party, a lot of Republican organization people, are very concerned about the Tea Party for the exact reason you mentioned. They lost a number, not only this election, but even in 2010, in the midterm, I get the loss in the years. 2010, they lost some seats, like in Delaware, they should have won those seats. And it was because of the Tea Party and the extremist positions that were taken that they lost those seats. Particularly in Delaware, there was no question that they were going to win Delaware. And then the Tea Party winds up winning the primary, and there was all kinds of issues and strange things mentioned, and the Democrats won.
All right, they lost Alan West in Florida. The Tea Party. They lost Joe Walsh in Illinois, who faced a real strong challenge from Tammy Duckworth, the woman who served in Iraq and who lost both of her legs in battle, and yet, she had it in her to make a run for the U.S. Congress, and she won against a very outspoken Tea Party opponent. And then let's look at the Senate. You've got Todd Akin in Missouri, the legitimate rape guy. Richard Murdoch of Indiana, who said pregnancy from rape is something God intended to happen. Both lost their Senate seats. We have a wave of new women senators, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, which surprised a lot of people, and Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, who wasn't supposed to win, and a double-digit margin of victory for Claire McCaskill of Missouri, who was supposed to lose her race. Jane Graham Jennings, talk about that, all of these new women senators.
I think the main thing about all of that you just described, and something that historically I've not heard rape come up as a concern for our national leadership, frankly, something people don't want to talk about, sexual assault. And, of course, that's something that we are extremely concerned about and know that happens all the time. It's very disheartening that the only way this came up was in a negative connotation. for a very controversial issue and not discussing the issue that's key and pertinent to the lives of women, that sexual assault happens on a regular basis and women are raped frequently, but that didn't come to the forefront in any way to be concerned about rape or taking care of or addressing rape, but to use it in a context of a very extremely controversial issue was very disheartening. If we're going to talk about rape, I wish you would talk about it in a way that we can address it and prevent it.
It came up in the 7th Congressional race in the debate, Rob Mentzer, that you and I sat in on here at the Center for Civic Engagement. I'm going to play a short clip from that debate on that very subject. You're going to hear Sean Duffy, the incumbent who won re-election, and his opponent, Pat Kreitlow.
For me, I believe that life begins at conception, and it goes until natural death. And I believe that we protect life at conception.
Congressman Duffy, you talked about respecting our ideas. I believe we need a congressman who will respect women and make sure that they don't face government coming between them and their doctor. And we don't deserve to have a congressman who one of the first bills he signed on to would redefine rape. We don't need that.
I prosecuted rape cases. I heard the stories of women and children who have been raped. And as I was working to put those rapists behind bars, you might have read a teleprompter to tell the people in your community about it. So don't talk to me about rape.
Robert Mentzer, that was one of the most powerful exchanges in that debate.
It sure was. Yeah, the and Sean Duffy didn't quite answer the question directly in the debate, but I believe he is on the record. He's of the view that there should not be exceptions for abortions in cases of rape and incest.
Rape and incest, yeah. and as he said, he's 100% pro-life. But he wasn't hurt by that stance, even though somebody like Richard Murdoch was hurt in Indiana, which is arguably a more conservative place than the 7th Congressional District.
Sure, and I think, you know, this is hard to speculate about, but I think that you can say the difference can be in the tone and the way the politicians speak about this issue, right? It's one thing to hold the view that to be sort of 100% pro-life and hold the view that life begins at conception. And it's another thing to, as in the case of Aiken, to spout off with nonsense, fake science, and another thing in the case of Murdoch to seem to say that rape is was part of God's plan. I think that to some extent the life begins at conception position is becoming a more mainstream part of the Republican Party, but what you see is almost kind of like affect, how you speak about it.
Well, what I was struck by in the 85th Assembly race, this came up, and Pat Snyder, conservative Republican, said that he too believed that life begins at conception. But if I recall, you know, and I listened pretty carefully, he said he didn't think he should legislate his view on other people. He indicated that the way to get his view accepted by more people was through persuasion and encouragement, but not by passing laws that would outlaw abortion. Joe Biden said something very similar in the debate against Paul Ryan. So I guess you can be pro-life.
And
the difference is, do you think that your particular religious position on this issue is so important that you have a right to legislate it and make other people all across the country accept your contention that life begins at conception, because not everybody believes that?
The other thing about the difference between the Sean Duffy comments and the Aiken comment, for example, is it didn't get a lot of publicity. And if it had gotten a lot of publicity, particularly national publicity, there may have been more pressure in that election.
Well, let's look at why Mitt Romney didn't win. I'm going to read a couple of quotes for you. This one is from the American Spectator. It's a conservative publication. Here's a quote. "The list of fools who have brought this disaster upon us certainly also will include New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, the gelatinous clown who hogged up a primetime spot at the Republican convention to sing his own praises, embraced Obama as the hero of Hurricane Sandy, and then refused to appear at events in support of Romney's presidential campaign. Good luck with the remainder of your political future, Governor. It is unlikely Republicans shall soon forget your perfidious betrayal." End of quote.
Well, there's some questions that were raised with regard to Christie's action, and Christie came back and said, well, you know, he's got to call it as he sees it. And the fact is that Obama was calling him, was asking what the needs were, and that's what he had said. Whether this had much effect on the race, I don't think so. I think it was a marginal effect. I think it did. Certainly it didn't affect their states because their state was going to go for Obama anyway. I don't even know if New Jersey has actually reported, because New Jersey votes until Friday because of Hurricane Sandy. And
I'm willing to make a projection on it.
Okay, right. And it may have been a marginal effect, I think. And certainly if he would have said the opposite, it would have had a greater effect. If he said the Obama administration was not helping and having an effect. But it had some marginal effect in addition to some other things.
Rob Mentzer, the search for scapegoats, Hurricane Sandy, our October surprises here.
There is a narrative out there that Hurricane Sandy slowed Mitt Romney's momentum. I don't think that the data show that. I don't think that that's what the polling shows. That's one explanation if you're sad that your guy lost and looking for an explanation. I think that this thing with Christie, I think it's whatever else it is, it's a major breach of etiquette. The guy did embrace Obama, and I think I read into it bad blood between Christie and Romney. I don't think Republicans are crazy to see that.
And we heard too that Christie had been offered or thought he was going to be offered the vice presidency.
He was led on, yeah.
You know, the other thing in the convention, a lot of people had mentioned that Christie's speech in the convention was all about Christie, not about Romney.
All right, here's another quote giving you a different perspective on what happened on November 6th. This is from Howard Feynman of the Huffington Post. Quote, President Barack Obama did not just win re-election tonight. His victory signaled the irreversible triumph of a new 21st century America, multiracial, multiethnic, global in outlook, and moving beyond centuries of racial, marital, and religious tradition. Anyone have a reaction?
Well, yeah,
to that?
It represents, I think, if you summarize what he said, it represents essentially a coalition. And this is a coalition that Obama has, and a coalition that the Democratic Party has, and the Republicans have been talking about it themselves, that if they're going to succeed in winning the White House and making any strides, they're going to have to eat into that coalition, particularly Latinos.
I just have a contrarian part of me that I just can't. Whenever people start talking about, you know, it just sounds like realignment talk. It just sounds like the new America. And I just think, well, listen, when I look at kind of how politics goes, it seems like you're up and then you're down. You know what I mean? The difference between 2008 and 2010 was enormous, and the difference between 2010 and 2012 was large too. So it just makes me nervous.
But again, Obama picked up 96% of the African American vote, 71% of the Hispanic vote, a gender gap that totaled 18 points. He led women by 11 points, 55-44%, but he lost men by 7 points, 52-45%, yet women make up 54% of the electorate. Jane Graham Jennings, the power of women in this past election.
Well, one of the things that I've struggled with a little bit is when we lump everyone together, because any category of people are completely diverse, and, you know, trying to lump women together is really hard to do. So to wrap your head around that, I think, is kind of difficult, because we all have our own thoughts and individual actions. But I think as a group, and again, throughout this whole process, some of the things that we saw as a group, and I think that I felt as a woman, we're being attacked and we're being treated differently, and there is still no equal payment for women. There is still no equal rights amendment. There is still not equal representation. Even though we have the most women who've ever been elected before, we are still not equally represented in our government. So I think women are saying, you know what, we want to be heard now too, as well as minorities. So there certainly is a shift, but whether it's some kind of thing that is going to a big wave, again, so often those are the kind of the responses. I kind of think, let's wait and see how this works. And what I think is most important is finding a way that we can all come together, find our commonalities, and move forward.
Well, people have been speaking about the gender gap, but the other thing about if you look at women, differentiating women, the married women went for Romney clearly much more than the unmarried women. Unmarried women overwhelmingly went for Obama. So there was a difference among women's groups, and there's some questions, which I don't have the answers to, of why the married women differed from unmarried women.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Robert Menser, opinion page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the elections. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
We are talking about the just-completed elections with Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point, and Robert Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald. Let's move to the Senate race between Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson. A lot of people surprised that Tammy Baldwin was able to pull out a victory, especially against somebody who'd been elected four times to the governor's mansion. I'm going to play a couple of clips from the debate that took place right across the hallway here at the Center for Civic Engagement. Here are the two candidates speaking about health issues.
We need to strengthen and extend the solvency of Medicare, not voucherize it or do away with it, as Tommy Thompson said himself.
She does not believe that Obamacare went far enough. She said it many times. She wants the federal government, ladies and gentlemen, to run your health care program.
We did not change one guaranteed benefit in Medicare. In fact, we strengthened
them. You took $716 billion out
from
of Medicare.
Overpayments to providers that were unwarranted. AARP says your allegation is simply not true.
You stole $716 billion from Medicare. You took it out of that and used it
Believe
for Obamacare.
AARP.
Now, we saw that that same dynamic, that same argument play out in the 7th congressional race and in the presidential race. What does all this mean? Who won that argument, or is it still up for grabs?
Well, the argument, and I do health policy, is simply not true. They mention it over and over again. It's just simply not true. There was no $716 billion taken out of Medicare. What their figures come up with, it was a reduction in overpayments to Medicare Part C, and that's the Medicare Advantage plan. And there's some additional savings in Medicare. But that amount then goes to pay for the new benefits in Medicare. For example, each person on Medicare at one time got no physicals each year. Then there was a welcome to Medicare physical in the first 6 months. Now you can get a physical every single year. And there's a lot of other preventative. Somebody had to pay for it. Where did the money come from? And when he says they took it for Obamacare, I don't think he understands.
In another context, the exact same money would have been a wasteful overpayment subsidy for this,
right.
for this ineffective program. It's a total made up charge.
And the other thing is when he talks about, you know, the Health Affordability Act, the fact is that that act is the act that improved Medicare. So there's an interaction there. It's not like it was two programs. You took it out of one and put it in another program. That was the one that changed the preventative ones in Medicare. It extended Medicare 8 years. It actually added an additional amount to be paid for Part A on Medicare for more wealthy individuals so that Medicare could go longer in solvency and so forth. And so what they're talking about is simply rhetoric.
The president said over and over again that he would not turn Medicare into a voucher program. He's been elected, reelected. Does that effectively kill that idea? And if so, what are we going to do about spending on so-called entitlements?
Well, that just as in the voucher program, I think that idea was dead to begin with. The fact is that if you look at other kinds of situations, for example, George Bush did talk about that, but he particularly talked about Social Security and putting Social Security in personal accounts, this idea that you would own that account. That got nowhere, and I think this would get nowhere as well.
Hey, Harry Reid says that Social Security is a non-starter for the next term.
Yeah, and on the other hand, when it comes to making changes, reforms within Medicare and Social Security, Barack Obama's shown I think a surprising amount how far he's willing to go in the in those failed grand bargain negotiations. The supposedly the president was willing to consider raising Medicare age from 65 to 67, something that is shocking to Democrats, and I got to think would be politically unpopular. But so it's a measure of it seems like we're likely to get some grand bargain deficit reduction talks, and I don't certainly a voucher program will be totally off the table, but I wouldn't rule out some big changes in coming years.
Jane Graham Jennings is Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. Do you think it's even more important to women than it is to men?
It is, and for the population that we serve in particular, older victims who are kind of left in the gaps when they leave their abusive husbands or partners, they're left with nothing, and so it's extremely important to them. And there's a lot of older women who are falling through the cracks who aren't quite old enough yet, but they can't qualify for any other programs, and so they are really left with absolutely nothing. And it's one more reason why many women just stay in relationships that are violent and abusive, because they don't have any options, and Medicare isn't available for them.
And raising the age is an easy one to consider because Social Security has been raised, and it's now 66 for full Social Security and will be 67. So some people say, well, Medicare should be raised as well. Not only would it not provide care for these individuals, but these people are going to wind up in other programs that are more costly. And so the bottom line is that it's really a costly procedure. It sounds like it's saving costs. You can't get into the program until 67. But this is going to be a much more costly procedure because of that.
Let's play one more clip from the U.S. Senate debate that took place up here at the Center for Civic Engagement. It got quite testy at times, and it got testiest, if that's a word, over an exchange involving the country of Iran and sanctions and stock investments.
My opponent voted against sanctions in 2001, 2006, 2009, 2010, and received $60,000 from an organization that supports Iran.
You have tens of thousands of dollars in investments in companies that do business with Iran, including a company that teams up with Iran doing uranium mining in Africa.
I heard about this stock.
Who are you talking
about? I heard
about
the Let me finish. You had 2 minutes. Let me finish. You want to interrupt me, Joe Biden? Just give me a chance.
What about the tone in not only that debate but the campaign? Turned a lot of people off. But I'm wondering if, some people said Tommy Thompson came across as being rude in some of those exchanges, and maybe that hurt him when it came to the final vote tally.
I was one of the people who said that Tommy Thompson came across as being rude. I thought the Joe Biden thing, that was not his best performance, I don't think. And frankly, that it's hard to say how much that affected the outcome of the race. I don't know how many people watched that debate and so on. But I think that I call that debate one of the worst race, one of the worst races that we saw in this season. There was some study that showed that it was 99% negative ads on TV for that race, which I find totally believable. And like that little exchange that you played, both candidates kind of had a point on their attack for the other one, but it was totally trivial, pointless. Like, what are we even talking about here?
And accusing each other of lack of patriotism for the September 11th, 2001 victims.
Ridiculous. We're still, it's some 2006 vote. Like, it's going to make a difference.
Jane, how do women react to a tone like that when it takes place in a debate with the exchange that we just heard?
Tend to, I think, again, a group of women. We all have our kind of different perspectives. But overall, I think, we tend to prefer things that are a little more gentle and civil, and like to hear things. And the concerns that I have, and I think through this whole campaign, everything was so negative. And what still boggles my mind about that is, why does it keep working? I mean, people complain so much about everything being so negative, but it seems to be what the machine pumps out. And so somewhere in there, we are attracted to a negative thing. It seems to work. I don't know if it did or didn't work in this situation. But in general, when, we're talking and I'm with my female friends and we're talking about things, we prefer a little more civil tone across the board.
And I think it was the most negative, according to, actually, it's a former professor from Madison who's got his own firm now, and they monitor these, and he rated the Wisconsin one as the most negative. And it's not only negative ads do work, I mean, studies have shown that, but I think it was the degree and the tone of the ads, and the repeating of that Tammy Baldwin ad, which I think not only was negative, but
you're damn right.
Right. And that, and I didn't know you could say that on public radio, but it irritated, people. And as a matter of fact, I was on public radio last, Friday, and we got some calls, from people about that very ad.
The depressing fact though, Jane, is that it does work, and it's gonna keep working. And in a funny way, I think the U.S. Senate race is a testament to the power of negative ads because of what happened immediately after the Republican primary. Tommy Thompson kind of was dark on TV, didn't have a lot of money in his campaign, and Tammy Baldwin just strafed him with negative ads. He's a Washington lobbyist. He's a Washington insider. And I think succeeded in kind of changing his image to in the way a lot of people thought about him.
Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the elections.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We're recapping the elections on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, with Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, and Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. Let's move to the 7th congressional race between Sean Duffy, the freshman Republican, who really easily won re-election against a strong opponent, Pat Kreitlow, the former television anchorman and former state senator. Here's a news piece that I cut on the night of the election. The Republican crowd in Wausau had already watched President Obama and Tammy Baldwin sweep Wisconsin. Sean Duffy finally gave them something to cheer about.
This was one of the top targeted seats in the country. Nancy Pelosi told us that for her to win back her speakership, she was going to drive right through central Wisconsin.
Duffy introduced his mother, Carol, described in his campaign ads as a lifelong Democrat, as he revisited one of his themes, changing Medicare to save it from bankruptcy.
We're working to preserve and protect Medicare for her generation, but save it for the next generation. And I appreciate that, Mother. Thank you. I'll take your word on it that you voted for me.
Across town at the Wausau Labor Temple, a Democratic crowd already stoked by the president's victory welcomed Pat Kreitlow as a hero.
Stay strong, stay hungry, stay in love with this country and with this beautiful part of the country, and know that my gratitude knows no bounds for this amazing adventure you've shared with us.
To the Democrats, this was supposed to be their district, held for 41 years by Dave Obey. But Obey says it's not the same district that made him one of the most powerful men in Washington, thanks to a new Republican map.
When you take out a county like Portage County and Wisconsin Rapids, and then you put in St. Croix, when people look at that map, it makes it that much harder to get people to believe you can actually win.
Sean Duffy defeated Pat Kreitlow by a margin of 59-41%. More than $7 million was spent on the race. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
And Ed Miller, you live in Stevens Point, right, which is no longer part of the 7th Congressional District.
Right. We're now in the 3rd with Ron Kine, and we're in the Mississippi River District. And I've been looking to see if I could see the Mississippi River since we were moved into that district. And unlike Sarah Palin, who could see Russia from her house, I couldn't see the Mississippi. The actual redistricting, I believe, was illegal. The one that was done.
And why is that?
Well, see, I was co-chair of the Supreme Court committee that was involved in redistricting. And one of the state laws was that you could not do redistricting until the local governments did their redistricting. And so we did a lot of work on when local governments would finish their redistricting, and we came up with the fact that it wouldn't be until September. That was the law they were operating on. They ignored that law because they were afraid of the recall elections, and the recall elections may have changed the Senate, and they would have blocked their redistricting.
So, well, wait a minute. If the redistricting was illegal, why was it upheld by a federal panel?
Because they didn't. Well, that question is of state law. And so it was a state law that said that they couldn't do the redistricting.
Sean Duffy isn't in Congress? Or?
Well, no, but what they did was they repealed that law at the same time that they did the redistricting. So therefore they were doing it under existing law because it required the governor's signature to make the new law, the repeal, legal. So in effect they did the law. He repealed them both on the same day. In other words, he signed both of those bills on the same day. And I think there's a real question about what was done, with the redistricting. And some of that may come up. The problem is in Wisconsin, that is a matter of state law, and it would have to go through the Supreme Court.
You know, there's a general principle at play here. The voters are supposed to pick the politicians, right? The politicians aren't supposed to pick their voters.
But that's typically not the case. I mean, obviously, with redistricting, typically legislators are the ones who do redistricting. However, in Wisconsin, they haven't been able to do that.
And you know what? The Democrats could have changed all of this 4 or 5 years ago when they had Jim Doyle as governor and they controlled both the state Senate and the Assembly. They could have had an impartial judicial panel like they do in Iowa. They could have changed the law, but they didn't do it. Probably because they thought they'd be in power and they'd be able to draw these lines.
Exactly. And there has been push for, and we have one now in California, for example. After California was so controversial, the citizens put in, because the citizens have the initiative, which they don't have in Wisconsin, they did put in this redistricting panel that did the redistricting this year.
The Wausau Daily Herald editorial board is behind it. So I think it should happen. I think that should do it.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Well, Rob Mentzer, the Daily Herald endorsed Sean Duffy for a second time. Your impressions on that race?
Yeah, I mean the thing about that race, redistricting notwithstanding, is it really wasn't all that close. Sean Duffy won by about 45,000 votes. And a significant percentage margin. I think that an observer would have to conclude that that Duffy is a very good politician. That he way outraised the Democrat Pat Kreitlow. He was everywhere in the district and highly visible. And he overperformed in I was looking in Marathon County, which is the most populous part of the district. He overperformed Romney Ryan by 8 points. He got 59% of the vote in Marathon County. That's going to be hard to beat.
But interestingly, if you look at the cities in the district, that's where he fell short. If you look in Wausau, for example,
sure.
And certainly up at Superior, he lost a lot there. So his pickup was mainly in the rural areas.
And an interesting part of that district was St. Croix County, mentioned by
Dave Obey
in that clip. That is new to the district. It's suburban Minneapolis, and it's a very Republican district. Democrats worked all year to try to make gains in that area, and they did make gains in that area. The margin in St. Croix County was about 60-40, which actually for Duffy, which actually represents a good showing by the Democrat, but it just wasn't enough.
Obi didn't mention that he also picked up some things in the eastern part of the state, and he picked up that territory because they had to move Reed Ripple's district down because Reed Ripple didn't live in his district. And so, therefore, they moved the district down so that his house would be in the district. In the last election, he moved into an apartment so that he would be considered in the district and said he was going to sell the house. Never did, but then he didn't live in the district.
And they drew the 7th district so that it cut Pat Kreitlow out of his home base of Chippewa
That's
Falls
right.
and Eau Claire. He could see those communities from his house, but the district separated them from him. Well, we're talking about redistricting. Let's talk about other manipulation, the voter suppression laws, as they've been called, voter ID, curtailing early voting in Florida and Ohio, long lines at the polling places because there weren't enough machines in poor neighborhoods, billboards warning of the penalties for voter fraud in black neighborhoods in Milwaukee and in Cleveland. Did all of this backfire and make black people and Hispanics so angry about having their votes taken away and challenged that maybe they turned out in record numbers?
That's a possibility. We don't know. I don't think there's, too much evidence yet on that. I don't know whether they're going to get some evidence, but what the effects are. But the billboards are the most interesting one, because the billboards, who sponsored those billboards? And what it was found is it was traced back to the Bradley Foundation in Milwaukee. They are the ones that funded the ICORN. It was an ICORN group that actually paid for the billboards, but the money for the ICORN came from a Tea Party group and the Bradley Foundation. And that's where the money came from. And Mike Grebe, who is a leading Republican in Wisconsin, he is the head of the Bradley Foundation.
We're talking to Ed Miller of UW-Stevens Point, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald. We're talking about the elections. We'll be back to talk about some of the state Senate and Assembly races after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
And we are back with Ed Miller, Jane Graham Jennings, and Rob Menser. Our forecast for north central Wisconsin, mostly clear tonight, a low of 32, turning mostly cloudy tonight, or on Friday rather, with a high of 50. Rain likely Friday night, a low of 44. Saturday, cloudy, a chance of showers, a high of 58. Veterans Day, more rain, a high of 60. And we've got 47 degrees right now in Wausau. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to weigh in the elections, we got about 10 minutes left of the show. 1-800-780-9742. Let's listen to some sound that we recorded on election night regarding a very hard-fought race locally here in Wausau, the 85th Assembly race that pit former conservative talk show host Pat Snyder against Mandy Wright, a sixth grade school teacher who really was a novice at the whole electoral process, had never had any intentions of running for anything until this year. And then we had Libertarian Jim Moss, who also may have played a spoiler in this race. Picked up about 1,000 votes, took about 3% of the votes. You're going to hear a little bit of Mandy's sound recorded at the Wausau Labor Temple, and then an interview, part of that interview that I did with Pat Snyder.
But there are very serious issues confronting our communities, and I have met many of those issues individually face-to-face. And I know that we need to focus on finding good jobs for people here.
I think Mandy's message got out a little bit more to more of the people, that she will work with everybody and try to bring some fresh ideas. So I congratulate her on that and wish her the best success.
Do you think being a conservative talk show host and having to be so partisan in that role, was that just too big of a hurdle for you to overcome?
You know, as we analyze it, it might be. You know, enough of the people in the back of their minds thought, well, if he argued on the air, he'll argue down there. It might have been.
So being an on-air personality, a very visible on-air personality with thousands of listeners every day, maybe that turned into more of a liability for Pat Snyder than an asset, Rob Menser.
You know, it's possible. You know, it's hard to say, right? This district has been held by Democrats since forever. I think Dave Obey was once in this district. So I'm not sure that Snyder, you could have ever said that he was really the favorite in this race, but he did bring to the table a huge amount of name recognition from being on the air for over a decade in this market. And also with that, a huge amount of sort of association with a certain type of, partisan talk show guy. In the campaign, he clearly tried to distance himself from his on-air persona, and he sort of benefited from the people who had listened to him and loved his show all said, well, we know that's the real Pat Snyder. And then he had the space to run as if to say, well, that was just kind of, you know, we were playing that up for effect and drama on the air.
And I think it was like Romney. He was trying to move more to the center, and he was not able to get away from his past.
And he tried to portray Mandy Wright as a radical partisan. You know, here Mandy is running a campaign saying she wants to bring people together, she wants to talk to everyone, and he points out that she left her school classroom in order to fight the recall, fight Governor Walker and the collective bargaining laws. So, you know, there was an effort to portray both sides, as often happens, I think, in these campaigns. But Jane Graham Jennings, I can't imagine more of a difference between two candidates, you know, the conservative firebrand, and here you have the soft-spoken school teacher who, when she gets up to speak, you know, you have to lean forward because it's hard to hear her sometimes. She's so so soft-spoken.
Well, and I think the ideas that I heard coming from Mandy were really, again, I think about bringing things together, and her concern for disenfranchised people is what I heard from her. And so that may have been, the message may be soft, but I think there were a lot of people that were feeling disenfranchised, and that may have been attractive.
And she also, as just from observing the campaign, she also worked really very, very hard on that campaign. From the time from she had a primary, her primary opponent was the chairman of the Marathon County Democratic Party. So you would have had to think that he was favored in the primary. At least I would have thought. I think she just outworked him. I think she outworked Pat Snyder as well.
State Senate. The Republicans have taken back the Senate. They apparently have a 3-vote margin now. Again, it gets back to redistricting. The 12th state Senate seat, which is always, Ed Miller, leaned Republican, but yet had been represented for the past 20 years by moderate Democrats, by Jim Holprin and by Roger Bresky before that. They redistricted, you know, they redrew the lines, and Holprin just decided not to run again. They took Lac de Flambeau out. They put in areas of Forest and Florence County where he wasn't known. That benefited Tom Tiffany, who may have won anyway because he had name recognition. But here the Republicans have taken the state Senate back.
Right. And this is the reason he didn't run, is just as you mentioned. He had won a recall election and put in all that time, and now he leaves the race. But he was looking at the writing on the wall and decided to pull out. But a lot of those races, there's been a lot of races that were redistricting. Vorwick, for example, down in near, you know, Wisconsin Rapids in that area, she won it by a slim margin, but they had redistricted her. That it made it very difficult for a Democrat to win that race.
And Governor Walker, again, in the governor's mansion, he has control of the state Senate and the state assembly. He can get his agenda passed. Are we going to see that mining law resurrected, passed exactly the way it was originally written? Because one Republican, Dale Schultz, will not be able to block it now. And we could be seeing a big iron mine in the Pinocchio Hills south of Lake Superior.
Yes, we will. I don't see what would stop it. Why wouldn't they?
The Bad River Tribe might stop it.
True. I would question. I don't know whether they'll simply just bring up the old legislation. I halfway wonder whether they might get some Democratic votes at when it's all said and done. That vote was taken in the sort of the heat of the recall battle, and I wonder if maybe the politics will look different next year.
And I think they're also going to come back with that venture capital one, which is a real question, because the last time the state did that, a couple of years ago, the state really lost a lot of money on that. And some people were really concerned about it. It didn't come up for a vote. It was toward the end of the session because of looking at what happened last time. And they claimed they were going to put some protections in it. But I bet that one is passed.
How schizophrenic is Wisconsin that we would elect Governor Walker twice, give him control of the entire government, yet elect Tammy Baldwin to the Senate and give Barack Obama our electoral votes?
It is. And especially if you look at the two U.S. senators, they're about as far away ideological as any two senators in any other state.
Jane, were you surprised to see Tammy Baldwin get elected?
Tell
the truth.
Maybe a little bit, because I think Tommy Thompson had such great name recognition and having been the governor for so long. So I think there was a little bit of surprise in that.
And are Republicans going to have an epiphany here? Are they going to see that they're going to have to appeal to Hispanics, appeal to African Americans, do a better job appealing to women? And are they going to be willing to stand up to some of the extreme voices in their midst? I was listening to Rush Limbaugh today, okay, on the way in, and he said that the Democrat Party, that those are his words, the Democrat Party, got all of these single women to vote because the Democrat Party is a husband surrogate for single women, providing them with welfare, with all the money they want, all the birth control pills they want, and all the abortions they want. That was Mr. Limbaugh on the air today. And yet virtually no Republican will stand up to him if they're running for any kind of an electoral contest. When are we going to see that happen, Ed Miller?
Well, I think that his comments are strange, but I think the Republicans
That's one way to say it.
But I think the Republicans will attempt to pick up some, particularly Latino votes, and they're going to use some of the Latinos within their party to try to pick up some of the votes, because some of the Latinos are also pretty conservative on social issues, and so they may be successful in that area. They're not going to be very successful with African Americans, I don't think, but with Latinos they may have some success. They do have the Cubans, for example, which are Latinos, especially the ones that came here many years ago. They tend to be Republicans.
And I certainly would like to see, you know, we're talking about rape all the time within this election. I would like to see that continue, but in the context of how we can prevent rape and make sure that programs that provide services to rape survivors get the funding that they need. We still don't have the Violence Against Women Act passed, which has never in the history since it started had a problem. It has been a bipartisan issue, and that is still not passed. So I really hope that that's going to go forward. If we're going to have rape in our headlines, let's talk about what it's really about.
Rob Mentzer, do you think there's going to be an effort to quell some of the more strident voices on the right so that the Republican Party can reach out to groups that they're not attracting right now?
No, I predict total partisan gridlock and no changes whatsoever. I predict that that midterms, Republicans will continue to do well in midterms when the electorate is older and wider on the whole, and will continue to struggle in presidential years. I'm a full-on pessimist on this.
I think in the Senate there may be some movement of some Republicans, but I think in the House, as you say, I think the Tea Party's got such a hold on the House that they can't get a majority to pass anything.
Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, thanks to all three of our guests. Thanks also to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker, and thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, we're doing a show before a live audience here at UW Marathon County's Center for Civic Engagement on the results and recommendations of the Stevens Point Life Committee. That stands for Leading Indicators for Excellence. We hope that you tune in for that. I'm Glenn Moberg. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau and 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, WHAA 89.1 FM Adams Wisconsin Rapids, and WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3 in Wausau. A reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.